Welcome again to The Good Word, where we resume our study of Joshua. I am your host, Bob Resch. With me again are my conversation partners, Dr. Fry and Dr. Washburn. We resume our study of the book of Joshua with a lesson number 3 called Memorials of Grace. In this week's lesson, we learn that just as Israel could cross the Red Sea on dry ground, now Israel will cross the Jordan River on dry ground, and we learn the value of memorials. My first question is, God has asked the people to go through the river, and he explains that it's going to happen. Why would God ask the priests carrying the holy ark to enter the river first?
To me, this is a demonstration that the entering into the land, and the book itself portrays this in the sense of a theological element, not from just going to like take over the land and kill people, but to enter here with this is a God thing, and God is setting up this entire story that follows. And so we have multiple things that point to that. It's the ark, it's the parting of the water, like you mentioned before, where we had Moses and his rod across the sea, and it is God who is the one who is in charge. And the ark is the symbol of that element, the presence of God.
And as the priests came to the edge of the river and actually stepped into it, what happened?
The water stopped. Is that?
Yeah, I think that's what happened.
Yes.
And now, there was nobody very close. I understand the people were some half mile behind or something. Mm-hmm. But there must have been some people who could see that happen. And do you imagine they were impressed? Had they been troubled about how they were going to get across this river in flood stage? Well, let's imagine that you are Joshua, and you're in charge of a very large caravan of Israelites. Now, some are young, strong men, and they may be able to help others, but many are also old, and some are very young, and they have lots of animals. How are you going to get them safely across the Jordan during flood season? And if that should happen today, would that certainly be a miracle?
Probably, yes. I would think after 40 years in the desert, there would not be really animals available at this point.
I mean, maybe they ate them all.
But
there were sacrifices regularly, weren't there?
No. Because that is what we then will learn. Probably when we discuss the question of the Passover that is going to be celebrated, that it was not celebrated throughout the entire 40 years. So this is only the second time that it is basically being celebrated. And that is also a signal that the circumcision had not been done, according to the story as well. And all, the entire system of the tabernacle was described and told to have been set up for a one-time event. And we have that in the book of Numbers. But throughout the entire journey, there were no sacrifices. And so they need to come to settle somewhere, and then eventually that tabernacle will be set up.
Thank you. If the river bed gets suddenly dry, maybe a little muddy, but dry, and it's flood season, it sounds like a miracle to me. And if we could be sure that on this occasion, 15 or 20 miles upstream from the Israelites, a landslide suddenly blocked the stream, stopping the Jordan during flood stage, and it stayed stopped all the rest of the day. Would it still be a miracle?
I think one of the ways to think about that question is that we have in these stories selections from collective memory, you know, like things that were meaningful and people told over and over. And we have multiple things that are like Joshua and Judges, for instance, tell very different accounts of how the people entered the land. And so I like to think in terms of answering your question, like in my life, if I was to ask, what do I experience as a miracle? Often it's like an aligning of different circumstances that feels extraordinarily timely, right? Like this lines up with this, like there's some sort of synchronicity and I feel care. And so whoever is carrying along this collective memory, like I have no doubt that they experienced this event as a miracle and that they experienced care from God through this event. And I don't think that that testimony, right, that collective memory of that care is invalidated if we decide we have a way to explain the quote unquote miracle, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so, yes and no. I don't know. I don't know how to answer your question in any sort of absolute terms, but I think, yeah.
Well, thank you. So they did make it safely across. The suspense is over. And now on the other side, they have a mass circumcision, and then they celebrate the Passover. What did that mean to Joshua and the people?
The circumcision is told that it did not happen before, only with that first generation. But I was wondering about that as well, because here in Joshua it says that that took place in Egypt. Since today, based on critical studies, we understand that circumcision is something that takes place in the surrounding world. That might have been the case in other people's cultures, of course. And so now it did not happen for the Israelites, only now after crossing over. But in reference to circumcision, what Joshua tells us is something that is in addition to the sign of circumcision as a sign of belonging to a nation. Here it is told as the guilt of the people has been rolled over through this act. And so we are in Gilgal, a place that signifies this rolling over of the reproach of Israel. And so that again helps see, tells us of an aspect of a relationship between people and God here. So it's more than just a conquering story here.
Thank you. So let's think about memorials. Do we remember exactly how Israel made this memorial? As I recall, they had a special place to find the stones for this memorial.
There were stones that were taken from the riverbed in the story and taken out to the other side and then placed in that place as a memorial. But 12 stones put on top of each other, they easily get lost.
What was there? No,
don't you think?
No bronze plaque there to explain what they meant?
But then there is a second set of 12 stones that are in the middle of the riverbed. And commentators are really like, are there two separate heaps of stones, or is it only one? We are not very sure. But even if it was just one outside of the water,
those would be more likely to last till this day, wouldn't they?
If they are huge stones, maybe.
I think the part of this text that interests me the most is because like I said, a lot of this, like I have a hard time addressing factual questions, because to me it's like, okay, there are people for whom this idea of a conquest is what they find helpful to make sense of their belonging in the land. And then there are other people who find it the more like lots of various tribes were all living together and having small skirmishes and moving about, and you know what I mean? And so this is one of many sort of memories of how the ancestors, right, the people generations before entered the land and found meaningful dwelling place there. And in this story, we have this direct statement, something along the lines of like, when your children ask, what is the yes. meaning of these stones? This is what you tell them. Well, you tell them like the Lord split the waters for us, you know? And so to me, that's what I find like drawing my attention is this idea that generationally Our children want to know parts of our legacy, right?
Yes.
And why do we live here? And who came here first? And did great-grandpa build this house or did he get it from someone else? And this idea of connecting those kinds of generational, meaningful memories and stories to a stone, I think is very relatable. Many people have a symbolic, like an object, right, that they maybe have in their house or they pass from one person to another that it's almost like there are stories connected to the object.
Might it be very common to have stacks of 12 stones all along the Jordan, or do you think this might be unusual?
I mean, I think the act of setting up a marker to an event that is meaningful to us and to those that we care about is quite common. Does it have to be stones? No. But in this particular story, they talk about gathering stones, and there's a collective aspect of it. You know, there's multiple people picking up stone and adding it to the pile, and then there's the understanding that these stories will be told in future generations.
And the parents would tell their children about what happened at this very place. So memorials do stand out in our memory. Is the story from the memorial the same every time somebody sees it? With coming generations, might the stories be just slightly different from each other?
Mm-hmm.
When our family gets together, it's hard to find two family stories that exactly match.
Mm-hmm.
Would that be in yours? And in your own lives, are there some memorials in your memory about your lives or about your church that you'd like to even tell us about?
I do think over generations, memory changes. And while we keep maybe part of it alive through retelling to the children, grandchildren, and so on. But then we focus on different elements, and suddenly other things come to be highlighted, emphasized, made more bold than others, and so on. And so there is definitely something that changes over the course of passing time. And yes, of course, I do have memories that are important to me, to the way I grew up and my family and so on, where we came from and what things mean to us. And so stones are something like that, memory makers and keepers for our lives.
Thank you. Matilda?
And many, many Indigenous scholars will point out how, in a way, you know, the stones are much more steady than us humans. So when I think of memorials, for me, place is what matters to me. I take myself automatically to the forest that was so meaningful to me growing up. But in a way, stones all around the world have borne witness to human experience, to life and death, to war and peace and all everything in between. And so, I know I'm aware our time is up, but I think just pointing again that this text is capturing something that plays out in human experience in so many different ways.
Let me add a memorial that I appreciate. From the time I was born to the time I was about 4, my mother kept regularly a scrapbook with pictures, postcards, typed in comments on this. And, you know, I treasure that. I've read it many times. First, she read it to me, and now it's mine, and she's gone. I still like that book. Maybe that's what we're talking about here.
Yes.
In memorials. Well, our time is once again gone for this week. Our time is up, but in coming weeks, we'll have more questions about Joshua. First, again, thanks to our broadcast technician, Corin Bailey, and my own deep thanks to our conversation partners, Dr. Matilda Fry, Dr. Jody Washburn. Again, I am Bob Resch, and I hope that all of you will join us again next week for more of The Good Word.
You've been listening to Good Word, a production of the School of Theology at Walla Walla University and KGTS-FM. To order a copy of today's broadcast, you can call 509-527-2194. Thanks for listening, and we'll be here next week at this time with Good Word.